Let's begin now. 360. I woke up this morning and I said, you know, instead of waiting for a good day to happen, you know, waiting around through ups and downs, you know, I just said, look.
Are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I am here with my producer, Sam Davison. Did I say that right, Sam?
You did.
All right, that's a pretty easy one to say, but I historically mess up everybody's last name.
Hey, it happens.
No matter how easy it is. So I am here today with Sam, and Sam has not been my producer before, so this is fun for me, hopefully fun for you, Sam, as well. I will try to make it as exciting as I can, given that we're talking about caregiving issues.
Of course, it'll be a good time.
It will. And not that those aren't fun and exciting, but they're not always easy conversations to have. And quite frankly, that's why I wanted to do this show, to be able to talk about some of the caregiver issues out there. 1 in 5 Americans are caregivers. It's a role that almost everybody will have at some point in their life. And there's a lot behind that. It impacts your physical, mental, financial well-being. And I think as a society, as a country, we can do more to raise awareness and to put systems and supports in place to make the caregiving role sustainable. Because quite frankly, the caregivers of this world are the backbone of the nation. If, you know, if they weren't there helping and taking care of their loved ones, who would be? It would not end well. So I am all about talking about caregiver issues and supporting caregivers. But I feel a little out of the loop. So last week, I was in Catalina Island, California, with my entire family. I have 3 children and my daughter's partner, Tanner, and my husband. So It was exciting, to say the least, and everything went well. It was pretty smooth sailing. We had a few bumps out of the gate. So my son came with, and Sam, I'll tell you, because you probably haven't heard my backstory, as some listening may not have either. I have a son, Caden, who is 20, that is on the autism spectrum. He was diagnosed with autism when he was 2 years old. And from about 2 to 16, my whole entire world and day was around Caden and, you know, what can I do to get this kid off the ground and all the tools, support, therapies that he needs to be successful. And he's doing great. He is in college right now at a program for students with intellectual disabilities, but he's living independently. And he thinks his mom is the least coolest person on earth. So typical young man, I guess. But we took Caden along. And it's not the first time that he's been on an airplane. He's done a handful over the years. Maybe every year we do something that requires a plane to get there. And I always think, okay, I've got to prepare this kid before the situation, because airports can be stressful. Like, my husband is the worst. I don't know, Sam. How are you with traveling? You like traveling?
I do. I haven't done a lot of it, though. Just this past summer, I flew on my own for the first time, and It was a lot, but it was also, I don't know, it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, first time, that is a lot. I mean, it's a lot to take in and a lot to be nervous about. Where do I go? What do I do? And so, you know, my son doesn't do it enough that it's easy and natural for him. And so every time I'm thinking, okay, we got to talk through this, prepare. And every time I forget, because travel, right? It involves a lot. So he had to bring with him his computer so he could do some schoolwork. So we didn't go through that whole process, right? You need to take your computer out if you're bringing a computer, put it in the TSA bin, and then it goes through. And so he just put it in the bin, but it was still in the case. And so they took it out of the case, and they put the case on top of the laptop, you know, after they did their whatever. And my son just grabbed the bag and left. He thought that they would have like put it back in the case for him, right? You know, so I guess it makes sense. So he left without his computer. It stayed home in Madison at TSA for the week. So there was that. And then also, you know, I try to let him be independent and do his own packing and his own thing. I mean, he's an adult. I can't be running around packing his underwear. I don't want to be running around packing his underwear. So I just let him do him. I figure we can work it out, right? Everything is fixable or doable. So he did his own packing, which included packing chocolate milk, because that's what you would bring, right? If you're flying to an island in California, who knows? They might not have chocolate milk. Oh, excuse me. So he had chocolate milk in his bag, so they had to go through and take that out. And so it was a little stressful experience. And I'm thinking, okay, next time I've got to prepare him for this. And it made me think that there actually is some programs out there where they will support people with autism or disabilities through the airport process before they fly. And so I did some research into that, and I want to share that information because I think it would be really helpful for a lot of people, especially around all the stress and anxiety that comes around with traveling. And it's the ARC. The ARC is ARC, and it's a national organization, a national community-based organization with over 600 chapters throughout the U.S., and they advocate for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. Well, what they also do is they put on this program called Wings for All, or Wings for short, and it provides an airport rehearsal, I guess you could say, as well as a presentation on the aircraft features and the in-flight safety protocols. And so during this Wings event, the participants actually go through the whole process. So they check in, they receive boarding passes, they go through the TSA, they learn that they need to take out their computer and they can't pack chocolate milk on their vacations. And then they go through the boarding area, and then they actually board the aircraft and go through the safety protocol. And then, I'm sure there was a Q&A and some pictures, and then they're on their merry way. But it's a great idea for people that could use that extra support and practice. So if you want to learn more about that, you can go to thearc.org. And again, it's the, and ARC is ARC.org. So speaking about traveling and disability, I also just learned about a company called Able Trek Tours. And so Able Trek Tours supports people with disabilities so that they can go on vacations independently. And to me, that was super great news, because it's one thing that's in the back of my mind always as I try to prepare my son to be as independent as possible, and knowing that I'm, you know, not going to be here forever. How do I get things in place? And I always kind of thought about the travel aspect of that, because I think travel is an important part of life. I know it's not everybody's thing, but you know, that's how you experience and see the world, right? So I want him to be able to travel. And I think, you know, 30, 40 years down the line, what would that look like for him? And so I was thrilled to know that there's Able Trek Tours out there and that they support people with disabilities to go on vacations independently. I think that they can handle people of all needs. Some definitely, you know, need more support than others. And I was researching, I guess, on their website, and it states that their owner is a registered nurse specializing in critical care. I actually reached out to her, and her husband was an ER nurse as well, and the two of them recently had taken over this company, that which I guess has been around for 30 years, I think she might have mentioned. And so they state on their website that they have staff and volunteer members. A lot of those people are social workers, teachers, group home staff, medical professionals, and a lot of other just really qualified people, which is good when you're sending your child or your adult son or daughter out into the world with disabilities, making sure that they're in good hands, right? So another great thing that I learned about them is that they accept IRIS funding. And for those that aren't familiar with that term, IRIS funding is a program for adults with disabilities and their elderly and elderly people throughout Wisconsin. So to qualify for IRIS funding, you need to be eligible for Medicaid. So if you want to learn more about that, because I'm all about sharing information and resources, I would start with your local ADRC, the Aging and Disability Resource Center. So once you get this IRIS funding, you can use it for various things to support those with disabilities and seniors. And some of that to funding could be used towards a portion of Able Trek Tour vacations. And looking at their website, I saw that they offer day trips. Now, they're out of Reedsburg, Wisconsin, which is kind of central Wisconsin Dells area. But they have these looked beautiful travel, big full-size travel buses. And what they do is they go around the whole state and pick people up and take them on day trips throughout Wisconsin. I saw that they do dinner shows, Brewer games, Packer games, Wisconsin State Fair, of course, the Wisconsin Dells, right? Everybody has to go to the Wisconsin Dells at least once. They also do statewide trips. I saw that they take people to Tennessee and Arizona, Hawaii, and I support people with disabilities in another role, and a married couple is going on a cruise. They're going on a Caribbean cruise independently. They both have disability, but they're married and they're going on this Able Trek cruise to the Caribbean. But I saw that they also do Alaska cruises. So I was just, wow. If you're interested in that and you want to learn more, and I will say that you don't have to have a disability. Anybody can go on these organized trips. It's just that they have people in place to support those with disabilities. So go to abletrektours.com. And when I come back, I just want to share with you some other things that I learned about traveling and traveling as a caregiver and supporting those with disabilities.
Baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Well done, Sam. Well done. We were looking for some music that involved travel, and, you know, we gave ourselves about 20 seconds to find it, or actually Sam did, and he pulled it off. Awesome. So speaking of travel, I was just sharing that last week I was in Catalina Island, California, with my entire family, six of us total, including my daughter's boyfriend, which we're keeping our fingers crossed that this is the one. And it went great. The only little speed bump that I ran into was traveling with my son with autism and the whole TSA process. And we didn't really prepare. We didn't really talk about it. He left his computer in TSA and he used packed chocolate milk to bring with him. And so, you know, it was kind of a whole big experience. So it just led me down this rabbit hole of, you know, traveling with people with disabilities and what's out there and what should we know and, you know, how can we make this process easier? And I was surprised to see that, well, I guess I wasn't surprised. I was happy to see that the Department of Transportation has developed a disability-related material known as the Airline Passengers with Disabilities Bill of Rights didn't even know existed. So they have this Bill of Rights to assist passengers traveling with disabilities to better understand their rights, along with many helpful tools. And so you can find that information at transportation.gov. Transportation.gov. And it's the Airline Passengers with Disabilities Bill of Rights that goes through everything you need to know, including what exactly is a disability, what they consider a disability, and what you need to be able to provide to show that you have a disability. So we had covered air travel, but accommodations and discounts are also available for other forms of transportation. I was surprised to learn that Amtrak train offers discounts between 15 and 50% is what they had on the website to wheelchair users and a travel companion. Greyhound also has just a wealth of information on their website about traveling with a disability. And it's, I guess it would make sense that they would have that there, but it's not just it's not something that you would think of maybe until after the fact. So they do have a lot of information on what they can do to help you and to support you, and you know what different rights and accommodations that you have. And I also found another awesome travel resource that I came across, the Society for Accessible Travel and Hospitality. And I don't know if maybe it's a secret society because I never heard of it, but their website is SATH.org, and they have a ton of great articles, including 10 Golden Rules of Autistic Travel, which would have been great to read before I did the travel. So highly recommend them. They had tons of resources out there. And then I also found that the U.S. Department of State offers STEP, which is STEP, as a free service that allows you to share trip information with the local U.S. embassy. So that way it's easier to be notified in any kind of event of like an international emergency. And most importantly, though, there's a section under that traveler information that allows you to enter any relevant information about a physical limitation or a disability. So again, knowing that you're in good hands, people know where you are, how they can find you, all great to learn before you do the travel. And that brought me to, and I believe that I've shared this before, but I know the prices of this adds up, and I think it's such an awesome resource and things that they do, but the National Park Service Access Pass is actually free to all U.S. citizens with a permanent disability, and this grants access to any of the national parks, monuments, historic sites, and I'm sure that there's more out there. So that one, if you want to learn more about that, go to nps.gov. And one thing that I, again, probably would not have thought of until after the fact is that if you are doing international travel, Medicare does not cover overseas travel medical expenses. Probably nothing that you would think of until you're in a time where you need it. So if you're traveling overseas and you're using Medicare for your primary insurance, you may want to consider a travel insurance, which includes medical coverage. So I'm kind of glad I went there. I learned a lot. There's a lot of resources out there, and it all can be overwhelming. And I think it's best to maybe plan and look into this before you do the travel and not ever after, the way that I did it. So, but you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this show, The Empowered Caregiver, is I want to be able to share these resources that support caregivers. So if you know of some out there and you think that I should be talking about them and sharing them with others, let me know. I would absolutely love to be able to share other resources out there. You can reach me at liza@civicmedia.us, or you can find me on Facebook or Instagram at The Empowered Caregiver. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and I'm going to go down the road of dementia. I was just talking with Catherine Lake, who is the What is Catherine Lake?
She's the program director here.
Thank you. The program director. I knew that, but I just couldn't think of the how you say the title. The program director here. And she had cared for her parents with dementia. So that is something that I have not experienced. Well, I shouldn't say that. My grandma actually passed from dementia, and it went very quickly right after the diagnosis. And it was at a time where I had just got married and I just had my son, and my head was not in the game. And, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? As far as things we wish we would have been able to do or could have been able to do to support our loved ones that are no longer here. But I was not very involved in that process. And I did see her a few times, and it was really hard for me because I was really close to my grandma growing up. She raised me a lot of the times, especially in summer. My mom was still in college. And so we were close. So to, you know, see her and not remember who I was, or, you know, who my son was that I just had, was hard. It was really hard for me to deal with. So I can't wait to learn and more, learn more from Catherine and her experience. And I was fascinated to find out that someone in the world develops dementia every 3 seconds. There are over 55 million people worldwide living with dementia in 2020. This number will most likely double every 20 years, reaching 78 million people by 2030. So we need to start having these conversations. That is a lot of people, folks. Listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. I almost forgot to talk. I was wanting to hear that song in its entirety. I'm not sure I know that one. Who sings that?
This is Mary Hopkins.
Okay. Probably because I never heard of Mary Hopkins.
Yeah, this is the only song I know by her.
Ah, I like it. I like it. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it again. So I was saying earlier that someone in the world develops dementia every 3 seconds. There are over 55 million people worldwide living with dementia in 2020, and this number will almost double every 20 years, reaching 78 million people by the year 2030. So this is something that I feel like you're not going to dodge this bullet as far as being impacted. And it's conversations we have to know, because this is big. And I shared that my grandma had passed from dementia and I wasn't really involved. And it scared me and it was heartbreaking. And I think people need to be prepared. So I cannot wait to talk with Catherine Lake, the program director here at Civic Media, about her journey and her experience. Thank you, Catherine, for coming on.
Thanks for having this dialogue, Liza. It really is disturbing to hear that out loud, the number of people that have dealt with dementia, and that down the road we know, because of the baby boom, it's just math, right? More people, more causes, and more time to develop dementia. Mm-hmm. And dementia comes in a lot of different forms, as you darn well know. I think both my parents, at the end of their lives, had some, and I say that because my mom was definitively Alzheimer's, and my dad just started to get a little foggy.
Sure.
Right? And yeah, there's such a profound difference, and I got to see both of them play out. Mm. And what a privilege. What a joy.
Well, I am... I'm sorry for your loss, and I'm sorry that you had to experience that, but you do have this wealth of knowledge now that we can talk about it.
I guess.
And
yeah, I'd like to think I have knowledge, but It feels relentless. It feels uncontrollable. Certainly Alzheimer's. When she got it, she was 77. It was a summer that my sister and I said, Mom, I think you're repeating stories. And it's so different than what my sister and I do. Did I already tell you this? I told somebody else yesterday, so I wasn't sure if it was you, right? Did I already mention this? Because we don't talk every day. Maybe it's every 3 days. Did we talk about this? And that's one way to go, I don't remember telling you this story.
Right.
But there's also, in the same conversation, oh, did I tell you I had bet? Yeah, you told me about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So it was that, and my mother with the Alzheimer's turned out to be one of those kinds who just doesn't want to admit it, doesn't want. She literally said, I remember where we were, standing in the kitchen of a rental cottage in Maine, saying, Mom, we think you're repeating yourself in a unique way. We need to look at it. And she said, well, I just won't tell you as much.
Ah.
She literally just said, and that we had her tested twice, both times, made her madder than a hornet.
I was going to say, see, there's just all of this right from the beginning that is...
Are you a denier? Yeah. Are you curious about your own health? Are you interested in... It just scared her to death, and yeah. She was never going to admit it. My dad was calling us in the months following the diagnosis that, yeah, we were definitely got an issue, saying, well, they're playing Alzheimer drugs and commercials on the TV. I don't understand why they have to do that. I don't want her having to see that. Fascinating ways of trying to avoid the conversation.
Wow.
Because she determined that was her path. I'm not going to talk about this. I'm not going to admit it. And she was resistant to the drugs, and my dad didn't know the drugs that he gave. You have to have a full stomach, otherwise she won't tolerate them. So we just didn't. Because he wouldn't change the method. You know, breakfast is orange juice, meds, then food. And Dad, you got to do the opposite. Just the opposite.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't make that change. If I have to do all the damn cooking now, I'm going to do it the way I do.
Ah.
So, yeah. There's so many different ways you can take this journey.
Yes.
Another friend of mine, his father lamented, I can't read anymore. Because I can't remember what I just read.
Oh, wow.
And lamented that out loud with his son, who he then later called his brother, you know, as you get into the weeds of it.
Yeah. So how long did your mom live with Alzheimer's?
She had the typical 10-year journey. It was 77 years of age when we said you're forgetting yourself, and she died at 87.
Mm.
It was just relentless going downhill. And, of course, all the things that I know your listeners have experienced in dealing with this, the wandering, the up at night, unsafe practices. And some of it can be funny. She made a sandwich for my dad before he decided, okay, you're no longer in the kitchen.
Right.
He was letting her make lunches for them. You know, she was good at making tuna fish sandwich. And so she brought him a PB&J, peanut butter and jelly. And he started to think about eating it, his sandwich that she already made hers and eaten it. And he started to think about eating it, and he thought, this doesn't feel, smell. He opened it up, and he thought, that's not peanut butter. And she said, well, I ate mine. It's just fine. Just eat it. And he went to the kitchen. She'd made him a silver polish and jelly sandwich.
Oh.
And ate hers.
Oh, wow.
With no idea. You don't taste that? How does that become something that Alzheimer's produces?
Yeah.
And the silver polish shouldn't have been in the kitchen, probably, you know, or she went for that in the cab. Who knows?
Right.
But all that about that you talk about all the time, caregiving, the exhaustion of trying to keep them safe.
Yeah.
Is 9/10 of the battle.
I mean, that just sounds like toddler.
Yeah.
Time.
Yes.
All over again.
It's exactly what happens. From my experience, Alzheimer's brings you back to childhood.
Yeah.
The only memories you hold on to are the oldest, right? You start to forget your children almost in order. Maybe then your spouse. She may start calling one of your children or your own spouse, your siblings from your early years, or you don't know that you have to experience the death of your parents over and over again. My mom saying, where's my dad?
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's not with us anymore, Mom. And her just having to re-experience that.
Oh.
All those things.
So I'm curious, did did you, through that journey, do the re-explaining over and over?
Eventually, you stop.
You stop. Because I ask, because I did an interview with Marty Schreiber, a former governor of Wisconsin, who lost his wife to Alzheimer's, and he has become a huge advocate and such an asset to the state of Wisconsin with all the work that he does around it. But he said... he went through his journey of letting that that go.
The correction.
You just got to let that go.
That was really hard for my dad. I just told you that, Suzanne. What are you talking about? And in public, her last job, she was a church organist.
Yeah.
She retired from one for 30 years, where I grew up going to that church. And then she just couldn't stand it. She just went back and took another job. And it was way harder, way more confusing. The Lutheran service, way different than Methodist. So it helped in a lot of ways because she had to relearn something pretty big. The organization of a whole church service and all the things that the Lutherans throw in there. And the minister's wife was a harp player. And was mean to her on Sunday mornings. Suzanne, we just talked about this last night. Don't you remember? You know, and it's that, but you're right. You stop correcting when they're not in a work environment. It was special circumstances, but yes, you don't tell them over and over again. Eventually stop doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and stop correcting. My friend that I mentioned, his father said, "I can't read anymore." That same father started calling him by his son, by his brother's name. And he was advised, just be your uncle. Just be that.
Right.
And have the conversation. Do you remember that dog? No, I don't remember. Bob, help me remember. You remember better. Oh, it was so Sparky, of course. And you can engage with them and they can still live within their memories that they still have and enjoy the engagement with you.
I think I would love that.
Do you think?
I would love that. I might take that one a little too far. I'm going to have to keep that in mind when my mom starts, you know, telling these stories. And I mean, I say my mom, I worry about, it was her mom that had passed. So,
and you know, it was Alzheimer's, not just dementia, because back then they aren't diagnosing it. And P.S., the way they diagnose it, autopsy, the legitimate diagnosis is after death.
You know, I should ask my mom some more questions about that. There's so many things that I like call her or text her, like, I'm getting old, mom, do we have this? Did you do this? You know, like, what you want to know, need to know, should know. So I should find out some more information, but I worry about my mom. So I guess on that note, what was some of the initials? I mean, you talked about it, like just the repeating the stories.
It is so dramatically different. You will know, because you know your loved one. You will know if we're heading down just a little dementia, if we're into early Alzheimer's or late Alzheimer's. It is so obvious if you have both in your hands.
Yeah.
Like we did with my parents. My dad didn't get signs of real dementia until the last three years, because he was so smart.
Yeah.
And yet he was a paraplegic. So his exercise was nil.
Oh, you know,
just moving about, because he was a walking paraplegic. He had foot drop. A lot of people understand what that means.
But I don't understand what that means.
Foot drop is when you just can't control the lift of your foot, just the foot. So he broke his very low back. So dead from the knee down, not from the waist down.
When did that happen?
When he was in his 20s, he took a jet down and actually survived.
Oh,
he was
a
jet pilot in the Air Force.
Oh, wow.
And he managed to crash land, not just crash, a plane that lost its engine, the only engine that you have in a jet back in the Korean War.
Yeah.
So he told very pridefully, only in the last couple of years of his life, that he was proud of the way that he brought that plane down, because it was bad
oil.
Right? The engine seizes. It's not doesn't glide.
Yeah.
They just go down, but he managed to go down just right.
Wow.
So that he survived, but he did break his back. But anyway.
So he was doing all of this caregiving with his own disability.
A paraplegic. So when she wandered, he couldn't just hop out there and go find her. By then, he was riding a scooter, too.
Oh, my goodness.
More, you know? So it just goes on and on. It is a slow, progressive journey.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard.
It sounds incredibly hard from all aspects, you know? I'm sure physically, emotionally, I mean, it's got to hit you at every angle. And I'm curious, did he get support in this journey?
He resisted. When she started wandering the first time, you know, the first progression of the wandering was when they were still in a condominium together. Second floor, got to take an elevator out with the dog, and then she just wouldn't come back. And she would wander when they'd go to the, they had a boat that they still enjoyed on, what was it, Lake Superior, Michigan, Chicago, I forget which lake, a big lake nearby in upstate New York. Champlain. They went to Champlain.
Okay.
But he would let her wander while he's working on the boat. And he, you know, people
that was
right.
A big gasp.
Exactly.
I'm thinking in the back of my head, like, this is all sounds really dangerous.
It is. And so other people called DCFS on him. They were witnessing it in the condominium. You're not taking care of her. But then they'd come visit, and these two well-dressed, perfectly reasonable older folks are on their way out. They say, oh, yeah, you got called about what? We're fine. And they're like, she looks fine. He's taking care. I mean, he was. He was doing
his best.
Yeah. But that at some point, one must ask for the help when they need it.
Well, I was going to ask you, what would you want people to know, you know, going through this? If you are, you have the child perspective when you see this in the parents, what is the biggest takeaway if you really wanted to advocate or share or be able to help somebody out your experience?
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
More than I thought I would. You were just too kind, and I was too young to know.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand, and I have been talking with Catherine Lake, the program director here at Civic Media, about her experience with dementia and Alzheimer's, and how she had to witness this in both her mother and her father at the end, and just the impact that has on a person. And what I really want to ask her next or learn more is, what did she really learn? What would you want to come on the airwaves and share that might really help children out, adult children that are going through this process or maybe seeing signs and symptoms that their parents are struggling? Before I get to that question, I just want to share some resources that I came across in case you wanted to do some more exploring and learning on your own. The Alzheimer's Association is a wonderful organization. They offer peer or professional-led groups for caregivers. And they have support groups that are both in person and online. So I would definitely go to alz.org to learn more about their resources. I also want to share that you can always, always start out with your local ADRC, Aging, Disability, and Resource Center. They are in every county throughout Wisconsin. Some of them may not go by the ADRC, but they're in every county. And if you just Google search that, you can find your location. They actually have dementia care specialists on staff who can help address your current situation and help you plan for the future. including advanced care plans and connecting to legal and financial planning experts. So they are another one. They also offer support groups as well. And I always want to share information about the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance, who is a sponsor who helps support the show and the work that I do. They have a website, wisconsincaregiver.org. I always recommend that as a first place to go because it is just a wealth of information. Don't go there if you only have 5 minutes. You're never gonna make it. So wisconsincaregiver.org is another great resource to get some more information. If you are experiencing, especially in the beginning of stages, having a parent that may be developing. Is developing the word?
Yes. Kevin?
Developing Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess Alzheimer's is a kind of dementia. Alzheimer's is arguably among the worst kinds of dementia. I don't even know what their other kinds per se. It's dementia. And then within that, Alzheimer's being among the most heartbreaking. And I guess to answer your question of what I'd really want to say to somebody who was questioning themselves or their parents or even a sibling and whether or not it's happening, get the diagnosis because it is possible, even if the diagnosis isn't definitive, because again, it needs to be an Alzheimer's, it needs to be when you study their brain after
the
autopsy.
Yes.
That's the only definitive way. But then again, we now can recognize the differences. With my parents' journey, and every journey is going to be a snowflake, there was the denial, and that's natural. But once you get into how it's going to go, and the fact of the matter is, unless you have the capability financially, logistically, to keep the parent in your home, which means more and more people coming and going from your home, by the way, because you cannot do it by yourself.
Yes.
Again, they're all snowflakes. My father happened to buy long-term care insurance, thank goodness, because then he didn't have to drain his entire savings for their retirement to care for her. I wish we had known and been more careful with choosing where they moved, because assisted living is one thing. But if you have an assisted living where you start, I'm cooking all my own meals, I've got a little kitchenette, we're good, or you go to a place where, yeah, please, I want the meals, I'm done with the whole cooking thing, I want balanced, good food.
Right.
But then there's a place where mom can go behind the door, right, to the memory care wing, right? So that's what happened with them. They allowed finally for her to leave his room and to go to her own room, which is heartbreaking in itself, and he resisted it forever because, of course, he wanted to be with her.
Mm.
What we didn't realize was the place that he chose, she could not die in place. So we had to move again. And that's hard. That's hard on Alzheimer's people. That's hard on the caregivers, too.
You're going to have to walk me through that.
So you can buy a place where you can cascade down through the needs.
Okay.
Often you'll need to go to rehab when you're older because you fell, or you get up. My dad had wound care all the time, and they couldn't do wound care in this place that he chose, despite us saying, you got to find a place where she can go when it's time for her to go to that place to die.
Yeah.
And we didn't do that. We were in a place where we had to leave because they weren't allowed to feed her. They were allowed to prompt feeding, but they weren't allowed to feed her. So they literally said, it's time for you to find a new place for her to live.
Wow.
And therefore, of course, he's got to find a new place to live because they want to be together.
Oh, that just gave me goosebumps all over. Because
it's such a journey. It is so multifaceted and everybody's is going to be different. If you don't have long-term care insurance, believe me, in Norfolk, Virginia, it got to be $25,000 per month for both of them by the end.
I had a national specialist on long-term care insurance on, and it can make all the difference in the world. I mean, I don't know who could possibly afford that. And he was talking about he would have millionaires come and buy these policies.
Oh, yeah.
Because he thought they would say, why would I not? Why would I want my whole life savings to be drained?
Exactly. Because then you want to hand it off to your kids like my dad did. So he managed to save enough for himself to get through to the end, but the insurance helped not drain that, right?
Yeah.
But I've been advised by my guy, look, just save and save and save. Long-term care insurance is another one of those, if you can afford it, go ahead, but if you can't, you can't worry. You can't plan the end of your days sometimes, some people.
Right.
I'm not even making sense, but you know, everybody's a snowflake.
Right.
They're all snowflakes.
Gosh, we could just have this conversation all day, couldn't
all
we?
All day.
Well, thank you for sharing everything that you've learned and that you went through. Again, I'm sorry. That had to have been extremely difficult.
A little stressful.
A little
just
stressful.
A little.
But you know what? You have planted seeds for me that now I can go and take some steps so I'm prepared with my loved ones. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for being with me today. Come see me every Saturday morning. And you can also follow me on Facebook and Instagram, where I love to post all the resources that I share throughout the show.